I'll add my thanks to those that Lynn has already expressed, and this is an interesting gift, Cole. Thank you. I have to say, if I'd known 3 years ago this is how you speak, you wouldn't be doing that. Most of these are not for sharing in public worship. But I might have found the one that I might use when marking papers. If his brain was electricity, he would be a walking blackout. So that one I'm going to scroll away. The rest, yeah. I wouldn't like anyone to think we had tickets on ourselves. I'm struggling now. The writer of the Ecclesiastes pens what have been for me verses I have used in farewells before, with a twinkle in the eye. Ecclesiastes 2 says, and this is the writer saying this, not me, "So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless." And I would say that lots of people who move on from one ministry position to another would sometimes have those thoughts. But to be honest with you, if you're finding, do I need to change? The writer to Ecclesiastes has, it's not fair to him or her to take those verses out, because you have to read the whole sweep of the thing to get where they're going. And they come to a little bit more of a positive view than that. But if you go through life with an unteachable spirit, I think that's kind of how you would end up. We have tried to learn as we've gone along here, and I've learned about these things a little bit. Just excuse us while we change over.
I'd really like the red one. No, sorry. So we've thoroughly enjoyed immersing ourselves into Australian life and try to maintain a slightly more teachable spirit. That means that when we come to move on, we go as different people. I'm certainly leaving here as a different person. I'm 13 kilograms lighter than I was when I arrived. But I've gained 25 kilograms of dog. So there's a net gain. The beard was not this color last time I had one. For Lily and I, it's been great to be able to go to places we've been before to show Christian and Caitlin so they can get a sense of some of the places we've been, and to try and immerse ourselves both locally and a bit more nationally in what this amazing country has to offer. I hope you do give thanks to where you live. Often we pray, don't we, for the persecuted church. We are so blessed that we can gather in freedom and safety and relative prosperity to worship. It is a blessing that a lot of our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world just do not have. Let's never take for granted that we have this amazing blessing. It turns out, I'm very grateful for the photograph as well, the canvas that's been printed. We're very thankful for that. As Les said, that's been bubble wrapped and it's on its way with everything else to London. It's a product of Scott Allen Images. Thank you, Scott, for your artistry. I've taken 9,500 photos in the last 3 years. And not one of them's worth printing on a canvas. But the software that I use has this map thing that allows me to see where I took pictures. And so I was having a look at some of the pictures and some of the reflecting a little bit on where we've been. And so that's probably hard to read, but you can imagine there's a whole bunch of trips we've made up and down this coast. There's some that we did in the centre of Australia, around Alice and Uluru, and even Tasmania. And so when you drill down, you can see a lot of different things that you've seen. But what was amazing for me was when you pull the map back and just look at the whole of Australia, thousands and thousands of photos taken across thousands and thousands of kilometres, and frankly, we didn't see anything. Look at all the empty space. I know a lot of it just is empty space, and that's not for us to say, "Oh, look at us! We've travelled." We'll be paying for these trips for the next 3 or 4 years, so don't. We've made a conscious effort to really get out and see the country. But as I've done that, I've realised how little I've actually seen. The spiritual life. Our life with Jesus is sometimes a bit like that. You have to get involved. You have to develop your prayer life. You have to develop your life as a disciple. And the more you do that, the more we do that, the more we discover how little we actually know. Does that make sense? And for those who have been on the faith road for a long time, You learn over and over again, yeah, God is faithful and all his promises are reliable, but there is still more to understand. There are greater depths to plumb. And faith that is tested over time deepens and strengthens. And yet still, there is more to be discovered. The next one, please. That's just our home. Well, no, Mayfield's our home. But, you know, you recognize that. We live in a beautiful place. So for all those places that you travel around, just to come home to this is pretty special, isn't it? It's just there because I like the picture. There's no spiritual lessons to be drawn. And the last one, please. No matter where you go, you see, it's not the places that shape you, it's the people. And I'll just make it about me, I'll speak for myself, hugely shaped by the encounters that we've had and the privileges that have been ours to minister here. And you see, it's not just a question of what you do. You come and do a job for a couple of years and you go again. There's an ongoing life of discipleship that we're all involved in. Discovering what it is that Jesus has for us and discovering new things about what Jesus has for us. We can take that down now. Thank you, Stacey. Romans 8 is... some of you know it very well, but just a few verses from Romans 8. I'm reading from verse 12. Romans 8, verse 12 to 17. Paul is writing to the church in Rome about the life through the Spirit, what the Spirit-empowered life can be like. There's a sense in which he is also considering the mystery of God, recognizing that there is still so much more to be learned and discovered, that even though you dip your toe into the life of faith, even so, there is so much that remains unexplored. Just like all those miles and kilometers that have been traveled across Australia, yet still so much remains unexplored. But the encounters that we have shape us. You can read through the Paul letters and recognize that he's also shaped by the churches that he founded and the believers there and the encounters that he had. But he writes these verses to the church at Rome from verse 12. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation, but it is not to the flesh to live according to it. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. Paul writes to a community of children of God, a community of God's children who are commissioned for service in the world. We represent here today the community of faith that is Newcastle. Some are visiting, some have other faith families they belong to. For our work day, Monday to Friday, friends, it's so great to see you today. This is church Monday to Friday, and other churches might be where you spend on Sunday. But this community of faith, you see, extends not just our Sunday time together, but right through the week. One of the great blessings of this place is how it constantly buzzes with people. We're blessed to work with some very skilled people. It's a community of faith all the time. You are part of that. We are part of that. We together are this community of faith. We don't do the life of faith alone. Paul says to the church at Rome, you are children, plural, of God. Those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. And the you in this text is plural. You together. You plural. Sometimes in Western Christianity we've over-individualized it. It's about my life with Jesus. It's about my decision. It's about my prayer life. And that's important. But we only ever do that in community. And we need the community of faith. And I want to say to you on my last message, Sunday message to you, don't forget how much you need each other. We need the community of faith. That's how we grow. That's how we deepen. That's how we extend our walk into those unexplored places. Because we do it together. No one does it alone. During the one of the things that's been very salutary for me this week is that most of the people coming through here couldn't care less that we were finishing and packing up to leave. People just came as they always come for what they want. And they want it now. And it didn't really matter what I was thinking. During the week, a couple walked in here with a very complicated story. And a whole bunch of stuff going on for them. And I listened for a while and tried to figure out what was going on. And then I thought, well, actually, what I'll do. So I got them to take a seat, and I went upstairs to talk to Danny in the money care office, because I know she has the particular expertise that I wanted. So I went and got her advice. And she gave it, and it was fine. But what Danny said to open that conversation has stayed with me. And I wouldn't want to embarrass her, but it was a very natural thing. Because she listened to my version of this couple's story, and then she said, okay, how are we, not you, how are we going to reveal Jesus to these people in this situation? I want to bottle that moment. I want to make a sign of that. If I was still allowed to sign checks here, we might even buy one. A big sign to remind everybody that in every encounter, the question that we always want to be asking each other is this: how are we together, how are we going to unveil Jesus to this person, to these people in this moment? Right there in that question is our communal life of ministry and mission. It's captured in that question. I want to encourage you, the community of faith of Newcastle, to go on asking that question, to have those conversations, not just to give out the bag of food. That's easy. We do it all the time, and I do it too. But to go beyond that and to say, yeah, we've got some of the answers here, but the real question is not, can we solve your problems? The real question is this: how can we unveil Jesus to this person in this moment? And if we orientate our thinking in that way, then some of the other issues that people present with will very easily be solved. Or they'll discover the resources to solve them themselves. The community of faith, you see, does that. So go on asking that question. Go on being the people who will ask that, who will seek that, who will hold each other to account for that question and those outcomes. Recognize that the community of faith extends beyond. There's all sorts of amazing things happen in this place. You've seen some of Frank's story in the back of the newsletter. Frank's here this morning, and Frank, we really appreciate who you are and the amazing work of transformation that I know God is doing in your life. And we see that, but we see it multiplied all the time. And it's multiplied, and it happens when we ask the question, how will we unveil Jesus in this moment? How will we unveil Jesus? How will this person take a step further into the unexplored territory of life and faith? What would that look like? We serve alongside some amazing youth workers in this place. And then there's talked about how maybe within the life of the core, we haven't quite got the youth and children's ministries that we would dream of having. But doesn't mean that we won't have them one day. So pray for Just Brass and get involved in that program and others like it that will come along. That might be the way in which other families get involved here. But also, when you see our friends from the youth team upstairs around, ask them, pray for them, ask them, how can we pray for you? How can we serve you? How can we develop what's going on? How can we be part of that? I believe that there is work being done here in Newcastle that will shape a generation in Australia. That's a bold claim, but I'm prepared to say that publicly. I've listened to some of the things that are going on. I've had a touch into some of the things that are going on, and I really believe that we are seeing, birthed in this place in Newcastle, the beginnings of a strategy that may well shape a generation. So what else more exciting would there be to pray for than that, and to support and to get involved with? Transformation stories happening all the time. Tuesday this week, a new member of the Money Care team joins as a national role. Her job is to make sure that it's to really speak into institutions about financial inclusion. So right in the place where individuals come for Money Care counselling, they've got their own personal debt problems. At the same time, there's someone in that team that's going to be working on a national stage to try and make better outcomes for generations of Australians. That's happening in Newcastle, within our community of faith. That's exciting, isn't it? There is so much to be excited about. There's so much to pray for. And it's all about the community that we represent. It's in the simple conversations. It's in the walking group that gets alongside people and just does life together for a couple of hours. It's in the people that came to Primetimers the other week and brought a song that they thought was just going to be entertaining, but actually had deep, significant spiritual moments for lots and lots of people. Because God uses it all when it's offered to him. The community of faith will do that together. If the community of faith will found itself on Jesus and asking the question, how will we unveil Jesus in this moment? Paul in Romans 8, going back to the text, is very clear. The children of God are those who are led by the Spirit of God. This is what the Spirit-empowered life is like. That community of faith is a community of children. Now, you can picture a community of children without supervision. If you're not sure, come to Mainly Music on a Tuesday. Oh, they are supervised on Tuesdays. But then imagine them not being supervised. And what would happen? It would be fun for a while, but not for very long. But the children of God have a Heavenly Father who cares and loves and nurtures and who's is to be relied upon. So it's okay for us to be a community of children. Children of God. It's a very loaded phrase in the Bible. It is about our dependence upon him. It's about the fact that we don't know what we're doing most of the time, like children don't. It's also much richer than that, because it's about adoption into his family. This is a text of Trinity Sunday, which was last week. We spent it Red Chill collecting. But actually, adoption into sonship is about being invited into the same relationship with God that he enjoys within himself. That's complicated, I know. But that's what we're called to be. If you hear nothing else this morning, and if you've heard nothing else these last 3 years, hear this, that there is a God in heaven who loves you, who has come in Jesus to find you, to rescue you, to bring you home to himself, and he calls you his precious child. And the truth is, he calls you his precious child whether you choose to acknowledge that or not. Jesus talks to Nicodemus and rocks his world and shakes his understanding. He says, you don't really understand the things of God as much as you do, but God is at work all the time, lapping at the shores of people's lives. And it's happening here. And I know some of us, well, we're all 3 years older than we were 3 years ago. That's just maths. Some of us are 3 years more tired, 3 years less wanting to do things. I get all that. We can get down if we want to. Or we could sit back and look at the unexplored places and recognize that God is already at work in those places. And he's drawing people to himself all the time. And it's just a question for us of getting alongside and asking that question in this moment. How can I help you see Jesus a bit clearer so you'll take that further step forward into the unknown, into the depths of faith? Children of God who are reliant upon him. We sing, what a faithful God have I, but the truth is, it's the wrong way around. What a faithful God has me, actually. It's only because he has me and he has you that I can proclaim his faithfulness, that you can proclaim his faithfulness. So be comfortable with your status as a child of God. Because the children of God get crowns. But you don't get them just yet. It's a community of faith, a community of children of God who are commissioned, who are sent out in the world to proclaim the things of God. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. If we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ. If indeed we share in his sufferings, in order we may also share in his glory. And that's about proclaiming that. Proclaiming his glory. Prophet Isaiah, chapter 6 of Isaiah. Isaiah gets a vision of heaven. He's caught up in and he sees something about the courtyard, about the courts of heaven is like, and he sees the Lord in filling the temple and all the angels and you can read the whole vision. It's just a really amazing description. But he says in that moment, woe is me, I'm undone, for I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And then the angel goes to the fire and takes the coal and touches his lips and says, your guilt is atoned for. All of that happens in the space of 5 verses at the beginning of Isaiah chapter 6. And then, remember, just Isaiah is seeing this, right? God says in that moment, who will go for us? And Isaiah says, here am I, send me. There is no one else there. There is no one else that God is speaking to. God could just cut the chase and say, Isaiah, you've seen all these amazing things. Now you go. But he doesn't. Because the commission of God is a question of call and response. You have to choose to go. And you have to be there to hear the question. So in the splendor of that vision, God says as if to anyone who might be listening, knowing full well that only Isaiah is there to hear it, who will go for us? After all you've seen, all you've captured in this vision, what will you now go and say? How will you now go and share that? Who will go? And Isaiah says, well, I'm here, I'll go. Well, God already knew that. But it needed Isaiah to say, I will go. I will take that on. Friends, it needs all of us. It needs all of us. If you've captured something about who Jesus is for you, if you've taken that step into the unexplored places of faith, and then realizing that actually God has a place for you, people that only you can minister to. It's not always in the big program things that we do and fundraise for. It's in the individual conversations that you and I have. So, I am going. Shaped by experiences, shaped by conversations, shaped by people, shaped by places. But that's not really about me today, or Lindley, or Christian, or Caitlin. The question remains this. Who is it that you'll have an encounter with that will leave you asking the question, how will we unveil Jesus to this person in this moment? And you'll only be positioned to ask that question if you will say, here am I, send me. Officers will come and go through here, but you are a sent people. It's not about what we do here. It's about who we are out there. Here am I, send me. Here are we, Lord, send us. Send us.